Welcome to this special edition of the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and it's presented by CMA Consulting. Dan Bean from CMA joins us in studio as we go back through some of those family business stories where they talk about hard times in their family business. We'll hear from Weekends Only, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, John Henry Foster, Winco Windows, OK Hatchery, Storm Guard, Petker Construction, also Diva Imports. We tell the story of family businesses on the show from across the St. Louis region, the struggles that they have, and in this episode, it'll be a very special compilation of some of those stories. Over the course of the show, if you would like to listen back to any of the individual stories, you can always do that by going to KMOX.com, click the podcast button, and search for The Business of Family Business. First, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. A lot of the stories we've heard on this program, The Business of Family Business, almost always there's some difficulty or struggle a family business has gone through and had to overcome. And a lot of times this is just really the point where family businesses step up, the make or break point for a lot of them.
Business is a lot like an individual person. At some point in the life, they're going to face a very serious challenge and be extremely tested. And resilience is very important. When you are in that spot in a business, generally what most businesses do, they focus on our mission, our purpose, our key competitive strengths, our key competencies, what we can most do, and make sure we are continuing to add value in the marketplace. And that's what we build on, that's what we focus on, and that's what we go do.
In our opening segment, we'll hear from Weekends Only and Chesterfield Fence and Deck. First, Weekends Only. What about your relationship with your dad? One of the things and one of the memories I read about was regarding some of the hardships leading into the company, where there were some points where they felt like there might not be a company in the future. There were some parts where the furniture business, and it wasn't going so well. How did your dad handle that?
Dad was, his strength was really in people, in relationships. And he brought this to bear when we were going through our darkest times. As a family business, we had opened a store in St. Charles County. After 1 year, it started to go downhill quickly. It was as the recession. It was the late 1980s, because when the 1990 recession hit, it started to go downhill. It got so bad that we started to not be able to pay our bills, and we weren't just bleeding. We were hemorrhaging cash, and we had to close that store. After losing over $1 million, and we still had a long-term lease that we were on the hook for. And one day, Dad called a family meeting at my house. And around the kitchen table, he stunned us with the brutal facts, and he said to us, if things didn't start improving in 1 month, we were going to have to close the business. And so we put together a cost-cutting plan, including layoffs, salary cuts for ourselves, all employees. And then we set up meetings with our lenders to try and convince them to stick with us. And it was one of these meetings that I'll never forget. I went with my dad to meet with the lender who had our line of credit that funded our inventory. And we had fallen behind in our payments, and I thought that they'd pull the line, call the loan, and throw us into bankruptcy, and Phillips Furniture would be no more. Now, Dad had spoken with this lender on numerous occasions, and in the previous months, working through past due bills, and so they knew my dad. They knew him well. And so here we are. We laid out our cost-cutting plans. We laid out our forecasts, how we're going to, promise how we're going to pay him off. And the guy just kept staring at the numbers, very concerned look on his face as he reviewed them. And there was silence, very scary silence. And I thought to myself, oh, God, this is going to be it. This is the end of Phillips Furniture. But then Dad cleared his voice, and he looked the guy right in the eye, and he said, look, it may take some time, but I'm going to pay you what I owe you. You have my word. And the guy rose slowly from his chair, and I thought he was going to leave, but he reached out for my dad's hand, and he shook it, and he said, that's all I wanted to hear you say. We will stand by you. That day was a tremendous lesson, and my esteem for my father just soared, because I learned an invaluable lesson that you got to communicate with your lenders often. In family business in particular, you got to keep them informed. Yes, show them your plans, show them your forecasts, but also let them know you and who you are, what you stand for. so they get a sense of your character. And when tough times come, because they will come, you'll have real credit where it counts the most, in your word.
When you extend your word out, do you feel like you're extending in part your dad's too, keeping the legacy together?
It is part of our family legacy, I think, to say the truth and mean what you say, mm-hmm. do what you say you're going to do. It is part of the family legacy. I think you're right.
It's a pretty powerful moment with standing there with the lender and knowing that everything you worked for could come to an end if it didn't work out. What happened immediately after that?
We slowly began working our way out of the mess, but this happened later in Dad's career, and he had really had enough of the struggle. And just a few months after that, he announced his retirement. He appointed me at age 40 president of Phillips Furniture. And then he sold his shares to us four boys in the business, each of us 25% owners. And then on December 31st, 1992, at age 62, Dad left the building, and he didn't come back, and he let go of it completely. I think one of his great traits that he could really let it go and let it be ours. And we got to work.
What a great story to share from Weekends Only. Thanks to them and all of the other family businesses that joined us on the show, including Chesterfield Fence and Deck, sharing their story of how they overcame hard times. You were telling me about your inventory was affected. There was a point in 93 with the flood that could have ended Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Can you talk about what happened there?
I wasn't not there, but the stories are still told today.
Yeah.
The flood wiped out, although they knew it was coming. They're pretty sure that the levee was going to break, so they started moving some inventory off of the facility that they operated out of. Most of it was washed out with the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And so that created great challenges, because not only was the inventory wiped out, all of the office space was, the desks, the files, the paper, I mean, everything gone. There was a huge rebuilding, but one of the things that I find intriguing, and even today, there's still a lot of loyalty we have engendered with, and it goes both ways between us and our vendor relationships. So vendors, once they'd caught wind of this, the very next week, were shipping materials in to help get us back up and running. Within a very short order, we were back up and operating out of a trailer off Old State Road. The rest is history, but certainly a huge, huge challenge. I mean, some of this was not insured. I mean, the loss was pretty significant.
Really?
Yeah.
See, when I think about insurance, I figure a lot of that would be covered. So what wouldn't be covered under something like that?
They didn't have flood insurance.
Oh, they didn't have flood insurance at all.
I don't believe that they did.
Yikes. So
it was all self-insured.
Do you have flood insurance now?
Oh, yes. Yeah, on everything. We hold... Our old facility that we operated of was now a leaseholding.
Mm-hmm.
2010, we moved into our current facility, and we've recently, in 2014, constructed another 20,000 square foot facility to house the operations of our decking and our room divisions, as well as their inventory. The current facility we have is where our showroom, our main office management, and our fence team operates out of, including the inventory. And then we also do some manufacturing. So we manufacture our own vinyl fencing and our own vinyl railing. And then we've always machined a lot of our wood pickets. So we dog our own pickets. We can gothic our pickets. We can put a nice custom point on a wood fence post. Or if someone wants something special, we can do that. So we do some fabrication as well.
You said you had an issue with a title company? You said defrauding? Something happened along those lines?
Yeah, there was an employee in the company that embezzled about $40,000.
Oh, wow. How did you discover that?
Well, the money was gone.
How long were they doing it for?
And then they were trying to figure out what happened, but they weren't dispersing money.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have trades coming after us. First, it was the general contractor that was working for us saying, hey, you guys got to pay these people. I said, well, we released funds.
Mm-hmm.
We'd call the title company. Nope. So they find out that, well, where'd the money go? Well, we found out that it wasn't just us. It was a number of projects that they were dispersing for. We were just a fraction of the money that was embezzled. So
it's terrible.
We wound up getting it back. Thankfully, the title company, after some back and forth, put the money back in our account. But it was a challenge.
That hurt your trust issues with people?
Yeah, for a short period of time. Yeah.
When we come back, the Business of Family Business continues, telling the stories of how family businesses across the St. Louis region overcame hard times. And we'll hear the story of John Henry Foster coming up on this special edition of the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. If you're a family business owner, you know what it's like when it's time to make that decision to transition into retirement. And then you're looking at your family members and other leaders in your organization and wonder who is ready to step up. Is it the next generation? Is it someone from the outside? You have to make those decisions. You want to make sure your company that you work so hard for is in the right hands. CMA Consulting. CMA Consulting, they can help you make that decision. They lead a multidisciplinary team to help family businesses unify the next generation and develop them to be effective owners. From talent experts all the way to banking and tax and legal and risk management, they excel in increasing the odds of a successful generational transition and, of course, family harmony. If you haven't looked at their website and learned more about them yet, you should. CMAconsult.com. Or if you feel like giving them a call, you can too. 314-721-1860. How about you give them a call, meet with CMA for a complimentary, no obligation meeting to discuss your family business. It doesn't hurt for you to ask that question. CMA, what can you do for our family business? That website again, CMAconsult.com. The longer you wait, the harder it gets. You know that. Make the connection, CMAconsult.com. Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, in a special edition where we look at some of the hard times family businesses across the St. Louis region have faced and how they overcame those difficult times. We're going to hear from other great family businesses, but in this segment, John Henry Foster will hear their story. First, we are joined with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. Can you put into perspective how some family businesses approach difficult times in the company?
Hard times can also be a bit of a blessing. They unify the employees. They pull the organization together. When there's an external threat, it kind of gets us all recommitted, and we all forget about maybe some petty things that are distracting, and we focus on what's more important, and we all roll up our sleeves and pitch in and get down to business, and we really make hay and move the organization forward. So sometimes that external threat can serve as a blessing in a convoluted kind of way.
This segment, we're going to hear the story of John Henry Foster.
But we would basically go to dinner, and Dad would say, okay, this is what we're doing. And, you know, it wasn't a formal board meeting.
Right.
It was an official board, right? We did everything fiduciary correctly, but it really wasn't. He wasn't looking for our input of how to make
right.
things run the company, right? So the biggest... To fast forward a little bit, so probably in around, I'm going back in time, Ryan, but I'm going to say around 2007, 2006, mm-hmm. Dad was frustrated just in the whole process, and he knew he had to move this thing forward, and he put in a outside fiduciary board.
Okay.
And it was a big step. It was a big step for John Henry Foster, for our employees, that my dad had that foresight to say, you know, this is what's best for the company.
Mm-hmm.
We found some very capable people that my acquaintances of my father in different functions in the business world. And the first charge he gave to this outside board was to say, you need to find my successor.
Mm.
And so that board went out and they did an outside search. Outside of the family. They looked at my brother, myself, and they looked at another gentleman within the business. Their job was to find the best person for the job.
So for you, as someone that you and your brother were trying to get this job, what was it like learning that they may look at a third outside person?
Yeah, that was a difficult time, mm-hmm. right? It was really, I can only imagine for my parents, for myself, for my mm-hmm. brother, because it was something that I wanted, but I also knew, okay, I grew up, you know, with this culture from my dad. I wanted what was best for the company too. So if the board felt this gentleman was the best for the business, I'd have to be okay with that. And my response had been, because they would ask me, so I got that question directly from the board when they were kind of interviewing me. So what would we do if we hired someone from the outside?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I'd have to evaluate that, but I don't know. I couldn't give them a direct answer at that time, because I don't really know in the moment. Who was the person? Did I get along with that person?
I think that move by Bob Gow was the key that unlocked the process.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bob is a part of the family, his wife is a part of the family, and the two people who most wanted the job are their respective sons, mm-hmm. and they both wanted it, and they didn't want the other one to have it. Mm-hmm. And that is a horrible situation for a close family to be in. And I'm pretty sure there were a bunch of other siblings that were probably taking sides as well.
Mm. It was a difficult time for my family. It was a difficult time, Ryan, for the business.
Mm-hmm.
The business saw that. You know, you can't hide that stuff, what's going on. They see all that stuff, right? Now, to add another little complexity, just to interject another little thing on a personal note, around this time, though, my mother gets diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Mm.
So that's going on. So then at that time, my dad pours 100% of his time and energy to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
He let the board do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sad part of the story, but I think it also pulled my dad away from the business that it's in his blood,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't know if there would have been another way that how he could have separated himself from the business.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom, you know, stayed with us for another about 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then during that transition, that's when the board made their final decision. And my dad was at peace with the board's decision.
Mm.
And fortunately, I got the nod from the board to be the next CEO of John Henry Foster. Right.
There's a contrast between the same board, but at two different points in time. So Rich alluded to the family board, and he said Bob came in and said what we're doing and wasn't interested in anybody's input.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we would call a board with family dinner table mm-hmm. dynamics. It's like the family having dinner, and that's the kind of dynamics. He said it was a fiduciary board, mm-hmm. and they made the right decisions, but it wasn't, the board meetings were not very formal. They mm-hmm. were informal conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with independent business people, and I think you added three or four.
Fourth time, yeah.
That changes those dynamics to a conference room or boardroom dynamics, and they're much more businesslike. They're a little more structured. They're mm-hmm. a little more formal, and the emotion tends not to spike nearly as much.
Mm-hmm.
So there tends to be more even keel, more dialogue, more questioning. I can assure you, Bob probably could. He had the ultimate authority to make whatever decision he wanted to make. Mm-hmm. But if the board said this, Bob would stop and listen. If Bob's family tried to tell him something,
yeah.
I'm not sure he would stop and listen very long.
Right. Yeah. But that is a big distinction, Dan, and being involved in different family forum organizations with other family businesses, it's a big leap to put in an outside board, because the perception is you're kind of giving up control of you know, a founder if you're my dad. But I will tell you that decision, then it just became a very straightforward process. It took emotion out of it. You know, for myself, my brothers, the family members, there was a lot more credibility. It wasn't like we were picking someone.
Mm-hmm.
It was like this was just a process, just like in any other business.
Right.
Right. Now all of a sudden you're taking, but we, as a family business, the lines are so blurred. In a public company, well, how do you name the next CEO? I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You don't go, well, who has the right last name, right? Who's the most capable?
I was at the board meeting when the decision was made.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, Bob was chairman. And he ran the board, and there was no doubt that Bob was running the board. What he did is he facilitated the meeting. He had the agenda, and he framed issues, and then he called on people and made sure people got a chance to state their opinions. The board decided that Rich was the better fit.
Mm-hmm.
Not that his brother was not a good fit,
yeah.
but Rich was a better fit and probably less risky for the business and the family to put the CEO reins in Rich's hands. And so that's what the board decided, and it was a low-key, thoughtful, deliberative, dialogic conversation. There were not a lot of theatrics. There was mm-hmm. not a lot of drama. Nobody pounded the table. Nobody jumped up and down. Nobody yelled. It was a decision reached in a good and effective manner.
Did anything change between you and your brother after that decision?
To be candid, you know, no. Obviously, he was disappointed. He continued to work for the company for some period of time, but then he made a decision to leave the company. It was less probably maybe a year later or so.
Thanks again to John Henry Foster sharing their story here. Coming up next, we're going to look at Winco Windows, OK Hatchery, and StormGuard, each of them approaching difficult or hard times and decisions in their own separate ways. Coming up on the Business of Family Business, presented by CMA Consulting.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It's presented by CMA Consulting, and Dan Bean from CMA joins us in studio. Looking back at some of those stories family businesses have shared on this radio program and the hard times they've overcome as a company and how they did it. Also, some tough decisions that have led their company in different ways. We're going to hear from Winco Windows, OK Hatchery, and StormGuard all in this segment. And first, I want to ask Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. You also hear stories about how outside companies are affected by this and could even come together to help those companies get through those difficult times.
We still have clients and customers. We have to take care of them. We have employees. We have to take care of them. We have vendors. We have to communicate and be square with them. But we keep moving, and we do the best we can. Vendors and customers want to keep a business going. For customers, that's one of our suppliers. We rely on them. For vendors, well, you're one of my customers. I want to keep you in business. And there's usually a community around that will often help. I have heard of businesses that burn down, and they will ask neighbors, do you have warehouse space where I can start to rebuild? And neighbors are generally more than happy. I'll help you out any way I can.
In this segment, we'll hear from Winco Windows, OK Hatchery, and StormGuard. First, Winco Windows.
My mother's mother had a wonderful business sense.
Yeah.
And was very shrewd with her money.
Right.
And was able to help Winco at a time of need. And then later my dad, of course, repaid his mother-in-law.
Right.
As a dutiful son-in-law would. And but I think that's it shows you how companies can ebb and flow in their, you know, their
lots
finances.
Of ups and
downs. There are ups and downs, and that was a particularly tough time. I asked my sister, "What do you remember about those times?" She said, "Well, I do remember that Dad was kind of cranky and things weren't quite right." And but in the end, it turned out.
So Dan Bean from CMA, loans between family members is an interesting thing too when you hear that. But it helped the business in a time of need. It was another family business that lent a helping hand, and it worked out.
Yes, so there are a lot of times where the family business will loan money to family members, and it's a two-way street. There are times where the family business is short of cash, and the owners have to write a check to the business and loan money from their personal account to the business. And I think there's conventional wisdom that says, don't loan money to family members that you can't live without.
Yeah.
Sometimes those loans don't get repaid. So I'm glad to hear that Corey, your dad repaid his mother-in-law.
And was able to make the payroll. That was his major concern, right, was making payroll. He had good people that he didn't want to lay off, that deserved being paid.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the way to do it.
That is the event that happens every week, every 2 weeks, every month, that tests cash flow all the time. I remember an owner of the company I bought, he said, "I used to like payday until I became an owner."
Well, that is a very true saying. And during probably the same period of time, Corey's father actually mortgaged their personal home to keep the company afloat, and he also sold the factory building and then leased it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no question there's ups and downs, and the nice thing is they survived through it and continued to employ a lot of people.
That was Winco Windows sharing their story about how they overcame some difficult times. And next, the OK Hatchery. I was reading about some of the history on it, and you're showing me some photos not that long ago. So this has happened before you guys met. There was a pretty big fire in the 40s that might have been pretty damaging to the company. So what do you remember of that? You would have been pretty young.
Well, I was 8 years old, and I was just talking to my sister about that, too. The night it happened, we were sound asleep. It happened in the middle of the night, and there was a neighbor that lived down the street, probably a half a block away, and they were up late at night because they had a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby was up, and he looked out the window, could see the flames coming out.
Wow.
And he ran up the street and hammered on our door, told you the place was on fire. Of course, then, as I said, we were not in Kirkwood. We could call the Kirkwood Fire Department, but there were no fire hydrants, so all they could bring was a tank truck.
Mm-hmm.
And our house sat about maybe 100 feet away from where the two-story building was, and so they sprayed water on our house and on our roof to save it. And surprisingly enough, they didn't make us leave the house, and as I say, I was young. They didn't want me to see the fire, so I kind of was kept in the background and didn't really notice it until the next morning when it was burned to the ground.
What do you remember your dad saying about it at the time?
It was kind of fortunate. At that time, he was building a brick building across from there that he was going to use for a broiler house. And because it burned, he talked to the architects and said, you know, we need to add a second story to this building so that I can continue in business.
Mm-hmm.
And with the help of a lot of distributors and people that we were buying from that helped us out, we were able to probably in a couple weeks' time able to go right back in business.
Wow.
In this new brick building that was being built.
Wow. So with help from people that were clients, it got you guys back up on your feet and you were up in no time after that.
Right.
Big thanks to OK Hatchery, who joined us here on the Business of Family Business. We're looking at the hard times that local companies have overcome, some of the stories shared on this radio program. Next up is StormGuard.
You just don't realize how many things are taken care of for you when you're in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these systems in place. You have the CRMs already set up, and you already know how to do it. You've got the human resources department. And let me tell you, you got to have posters. You got to have all this yeah. different stuff that you have no clue about.
There's always something.
Yeah. And, you know, you got to talk to your lawyers now about setting up the company. And it just, yeah, it was very, very overwhelming at first. And on top of that, then you got to generate revenue.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that little piece while you're spending money like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And because the setup time in the beginning, you're hemorrhaging cash,
yeah.
and then you got to go make it.
Once you're in, you roll up your sleeves, and it's up to you, so you're going to make it happen.
And we said at the beginning, 1 year, our saying was 1 year is a sliver in time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It goes by so fast that if you just get in and go, that time is going to pass. And you can't buy time. I mean, we use that saying as well. You can't buy time. You have to be in business for time to be successful.
When things were very stressful, Denise, did you say, I could be serving ice cream right now. I don't have to be doing all this stuff. I could be eating a burger, serving ice cream.
Honestly, there were a few times when I'm like, you know, I do know the restaurant business. I do understand that one, you know. But we had decided it was a little bit too late. But yeah, I will admit, I kind of entertained that in the back of my mind a few times.
Thank you to StormGuard, who joined us on this program. And if you would like to listen back to any of their individual family stories, you can by going to KMOX.com. And by clicking the podcast button, you can go back to the Business of Family Business. Coming up next, one last segment, Petker Construction Deba Imports share their stories of how they overcame hard times or difficult decisions inside of their company. That's on the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. It's a statistic you hear a lot on the Business of Family Business. 2/3 of family businesses do not make the generational transition, meaning when it's time for a family business owner to step down, you try to develop the next successor. You try to identify who that next leader is going to be, the successor in leadership, but very few actively work to unify the next generation and help them to develop into effective owners. That's where CMA Consulting can step in. You hear Dan Bean from CMA Consulting on this program. They work with family businesses to help support effective family business ownership and also unify the next generation. You should give them a call or at the very least, check them out online at cmaconsult.com, 314-721-1860 if you feel more comfortable that way. Really, when was the last time the members of your family discussed even how to apply insights into the family business? Don't wait. If you haven't actually sat down and planned this out yet, the more planning, the better. CMAconsult.com. And that phone number again is 314-721-1860. It doesn't hurt for you to call and say, CMA, what can you do to help our family business? Welcome back to the Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and we've heard the stories of family businesses, how they have overcome difficult times in their company, what they did, maybe some of the difficult decisions they've had to make. In this segment, we'll hear from Petker Construction and also Deba Imports. If you know a family business or you are a family business and you'd like to share your stories on this program, we'd like for you to reach out to CMA Consulting, who presents this program. Just give Dan Bean a call and look him up on the web, cmaconsult.com. Just let him know you're interested in telling your family story. And Dan Bean from CMA joins us in studio. Let me ask you this. I love hearing the stories of family businesses that are resilient. Is that a common trait you find in family business?
Absolutely. And one thing unique to family businesses, sometimes this is when a member of the next generation comes into the business, is when mom or dad is in a crisis and needs help. And so a member of the next generation is pulled into the business, almost forced into the business, because the business and the family need help. Maybe dad passed away unexpectedly. Maybe there was a fire. Whatever there was,
or
something happened.
Or a market crash or anything.
Yes, any of that. We need help. We need all hands on deck now. Come home from school, come home from college, or quit your job out of state and move back home and jump in here and help us.
In this segment, we'll hear from Petker Construction and Deba Imports. First, let's hear from Petker Construction. Maybe you had a difficult decision or something, there was a hardship that came across. What did you guys do to work together to move past that and ultimately grow from that?
Keith mentioned the early 2000s. We had an entirely different management team. Obviously, my children weren't in the capacities yet that they could be into that they are today.
And some were still outside the company at that time.
Yes, that's correct. And so the management team that I had was not doing their job as best they should. And I remember, and we were losing money. And I remember meeting with our CPA myself without my then VP of finance and coming up with a drastically cut budget, you know, to streamline the organization, which involved letting the entire accounting staff go. That time, you know, Kimberly was working as a receptionist. And I remember as I was putting this budget together, I noticed that our cell phone usage had not come down as the business had come down, as, you know, as the revenue and number of employees and so on had come down. And I hadn't taken the time to dig into why yet. So in my budget, I just plugged in that cell phone usage and the way it was. And I got back to the office that day and I casually had that conversation with the group in accounting. And one of the ladies said, yes, you know, this was late October of that particular year. And the lady said that was in charge of cell phones said, yeah, I've been wanting to look at that since February and just haven't had the time. Mm. And Kimberly volunteered to dig into that. And within a week, we were paying for cell phone usage for cell phones that were not in use anymore.
Hmm, okay.
And Kimberly,
of about $20,000 a month.
That much.
It was huge.
Wow.
It was huge. And Kimberly got into that and negotiated terminations to all these lines and cut the expense.
Wow, I didn't realize that could happen with a business that quickly. Yeah. It's amazing business expenses for someone that doesn't run a business. They would be shocked to hear a number like that, mm-hmm. that many for cell phone usage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. So,
yeah, so we had a lot of mismanagement in the early 2000s, starting from the upper management on down to middle management, to the point where we had lost our bonding capacity. We had lost our line of credit at the bank, and we had roughly somewhere between, depending on what budget you looked at, 3 and 6 months of cash left in about 2003.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the brinks of bankruptcy at that
wow.
point in time.
What brought you back?
A new management team. We cut
yeah,
the
that's what did it.
We cut
we
the,
cut the budget.
We cut the debt
dug
weight
our heels
out.
In and got through some insurance auditing that. We had discovered that we had overpaid insurance to the tune of several hundred thousand dollars. Mm-hmm. So we recouped that money back. Mm-hmm. That helped quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it was in the 600 some thousand that we recovered. We were paying, I'd have to get into the details today, but we went back and audited 3 years worth of workers' comp and 1 year of general liability insurance and recovered. We had records to go back 10 years, but the insurance companies wouldn't allow us to go back 10 years. But basically, my then VP of finance wasn't doing his job.
Mm-hmm. For someone that went through it, how easy is it to just overlook some of these things like this? Because that is a huge expense that adds up.
I think that's probably why all of us kids get along so well. What doesn't break you makes you stronger. We all remember that experience, and we want to make sure that we're conveying that we're running a successful ship here, and we want to convey that to the rest of the organization, making sure that we're being frugal, making sure that we're being conservative, being professional in our mindset. We've got a strong backlog. We've got a strong line of credit. We've got a strong bonding capacity, and we're in good, sound financial footing to expand the business, to whether it's through acquisitions and mergers or through opening a new office. But it took some time to dig ourselves out of that hole.
A lot of hard work, too.
Yeah.
So. A lot of hard work. Big thank you to Petker Construction, who joined us on the show. We'll wrap up this special edition of the Business of Family Business, looking back at how some of the family businesses that were highlighted on this show adapted to and worked through difficult or hard times in the company. Here's the story of Deba Imports. Diane, let me ask you about working with family members. Sometimes you hear about the struggles of working with family members because, you know, you love them, you grew up with them, you know them very intimately because you have all the memories with them, but then at the same time, you can get on the business side and you can drive each other crazy. What's the relationship like in your family?
This is going to sound absurd, but it's really good.
Oh.
We're so fortunate.
Good.
One of the fun things, like, when we go to a trade show is I'm out of town, but I'm with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy that. I enjoy spending time with them. And I think one of the things that's particularly good about a family business, or our family business, I should say, is that we trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. And we have been fortunate enough to not have any circumstances where we've had to fire someone or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've been a lucky family business, and I think the key to it is the trust and the level of communication that we have.
Mm. You really think it's lucky? I think that it sounds like your dad knows what he's doing. There's a lot of expertise and skill involved in what he's doing.
That's true.
There was one point I was reading about when a key account declared bankruptcy and how that affected the company. So when you have and you work with many different accounts, how does something like that affect your family business and Deba Imports and the ripple effect that would have on a company, a family business?
It's never easy when you have a big client declare bankruptcy. The first time I remember it happening to our company, when our largest customer declared bankruptcy, they were 60% of our business.
Mm.
Now, we came out of that okay, because they ended up, back then, they ended up paying most of their accounts payable. Today, when someone declares bankruptcy, you might be lucky to get 20 cents on the dollar.
Mm.
And we've had a lot of customers declare bankruptcy over time. One time we got hurt very, very badly, and we had to put some money in the company and really tighten things down for a while. And it was an uncomfortable situation to be in because we were so used to things being easily financed.
Hmm.
My dad has always been a strong believer in leaving enough money in the company to manage downturns and to manage growth. And a few years back, maybe 6 or 7 years ago now, we had a really, really big customer that we had a lot of accounts receivable with declare bankruptcy, and it was hard for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get a revolving line of credit that we needed to use to manage our business. And we never were in that situation before. Mm. So we had to learn a lot of new things. And we had to sort of take a deep breath and a step back before we could start growing again. So it was challenging.
Thanks again to all of our family businesses that joined us on the show. And if you'd like to listen to any of them, you can go back to KMOX.com in the podcast section and actually hear their entire family story. Big thanks also to Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. We'll see you again soon.